Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers and the co-chair of the Endowment for the Business of Government. We created the Endowment in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. Find out more about the Endowment by visiting us on the web at endowment.pwcglobal.com. The Business of Government Hour focuses on a conversation about management with government executives who are changing the way government does business. Our conversation today is with Lieutenant General Michael Hayden, Director, National Security Agency. Welcome, sir.
Thanks very much, Paul.
And joining us on our conversation is Bonnie Brown, another PwC partner. Welcome, Bonnie.
Thank you, Paul.
Well, let's begin by finding out a little bit more about NSA. Could you tell us about its mission and its roles and responsibilities?
Sure, Paul. Thanks very much. NSA, located in eastern Maryland, actually between Baltimore and Washington, is a global agency. And we would go by the phrase America's code makers and code breakers. We have two missions. One is signals intelligence, which is an attempt to extract information for American decision makers, whether they be military commanders or policymakers, out of the electromagnetic spectrum. And we have another mission. It's actually the other side of that SIGINT mission, signals intelligence. It's information assurance, which is essentially preventing adversaries from doing the same thing against us, hence the more popular moniker, codemaker and codebreaker.
Well, in preparing for today's interview, I heard some interesting things I'd be curious to have you comment on, that NSA has been accused of spying on Americans. Is that can't be true?
No, it's not. There was a period in the 70s. The Church-Pike Commission, congressional investigations of NSA with regard to some activities of the National Security Agency during the Vietnam War period. Since that time, the legislation that governs us has become very clear, and the National Security Agency stays well within the rules outlined in those regulations and laws. In essence, we're prohibited from targeting what the law calls American persons, which is a step beyond American citizens. An American person is an American citizen in the United States or anywhere in the world, anyone legally in the United States, and frankly, any group comprised of the kinds of individuals I just described. And we can't intentionally target them unless we have probable cause, provable probable cause, that they're an agent of a foreign power. And we have to make that case to a body outside the agency. If the individual is inside the United States, we've got to make that case to a court, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. And if the individual is outside the United States, I have to make that case to the Attorney General. These are very limited circumstances, and again, only upon probable cause that the American person in question is truly the agent of a foreign power.
Well, another allegation we heard that was, if you don't do that, you get our foreign partners like the British to spy on Americans.
Paul, I've heard that accusation as well, and that's just as illegal as our doing it ourselves. By executive order, we're prohibited from asking anyone to do something on our behalf that is illegal for us to do. And at the same time, we are prohibited from doing something for someone else that their domestic laws prohibit them from doing also.
And while we're getting all the laundry out, we've also heard that NSA is lagging behind and going deaf.
Interesting metaphor. I wouldn't use deaf. Actually, we may be drowning would be a better way of putting it. With the great volume and variety and velocity of modern communications out there, a signals intelligence agency, I mean, one designed to work out there in the electromagnetic spectrum, runs a serious risk of being overwhelmed with the vast quantity of ones and zeros and bits that are out there at the present time. So rather than going deaf, we're drowning in this sea of data. Now, I will admit, the effect of drowning is deafening. It's hard to pick out the valuable piece of intelligence in this vast array of communications out there.
Well, give us a sense of perspective. Where does NSA's mission fit in the overall intelligence community?
We're divided up by discipline. And so you have, for example, the National Imagery and Mapping Agency that works on the visible light spectrum. You've got the Central Intelligence Agency that works in what we call UMINT, or human intelligence. NSA is focused on what we call signals intelligence, and again, trying to learn things useful for American safety and liberty out of the electromagnetic spectrum. And to give you a sense as to how our mission has shifted, our Deputy Director Bill Black is fond of saying, in the past, when he first began with the agency more than three decades ago, things were too hard to get. They were too little. Right now, for us, it's too much and too hard to understand.
General, let's turn to your career. What drew you to public service?
Well, Bonnie, I started in ROTC at university in Pittsburgh at Duquesne University. Continued beyond the mandatory 2 years, which everyone was required to take at that time, into the voluntary program. Was commissioned on active duty. The Air Force allowed me to stay at school and get a master's degree. And then I came on active duty, and that's been about three decades ago. We've done one assignment at a time, myself, my wife, and the children. Each one seemed to be interesting enough, enjoyable enough. We'd take one more. The same calculus would apply, and here we are 30 years later.
Well, give me a sense of some of those assignments. How does one become an intelligence officer?
Paul, it's interesting for me, coming into the National Security Agency. My first day in the agency ever was my first day as director. I had never served in NSA prior to that time, and in fact, a fair amount of my career was spent outside the intelligence discipline. Now, I do have a fair amount of intel background, but I've been at the White House on the National Security Council staff. I've been in plans and operations in the Air Force. I've been an ROTC instructor, a military attaché. None of those in the narrow channel that you would define as intelligence.
Which of those positions best prepared you for this job?
My sense is all of them. The most interesting job I've ever had was as the military attaché in the People's Republic of Bulgaria back during the Cold War. All the assignments, I think, have well prepared me for the job in the sense that we've got some wonderful professionals, thousands of professionals, talented people, hardworking, patriotic people at Fort Meade and around the world. And they're well-schooled in SIGINT, Signals Intelligence, and in the National Security Agency. Well, here you have a director who's bringing in a bit of a different perspective. He's not been within NSA before. Not all of his career has been inside the intelligence community. And so I, in a sense, have some value to add during our discussions because my experiences have been a bit more varied than the other folks in the discussion.
Is this your biggest challenge so far, or what have been your biggest challenges throughout your career?
Bonnie, this is the toughest job I've ever had. I told one small group last week that my job prior to this was in Korea. I was with U.S. Forces there, not an intelligence job. I was the Deputy Chief of Staff for U.S. Forces. I'm fond of saying that in that job, I could kick my feet under the desk and place them under my chemical gear, my Kevlar, my body armor, and my helmet. That my desk itself was, even though in the center of Seoul, was within range of deployed North Korean artillery, and that my key job was negotiating at Panmunjom with the North Korean military. I was our negotiator there on a more permanent peace for the Korean Peninsula. And then I still miss Korea.
Is it hard because of the subject matter? Is it hard because of the management challenges?
All of the above. Let me tell you what's really driving us. We've downsized more than a third over the past 10-plus years. We've got a glide path pretty much like the rest of the Department of Defense and the intelligence community. That's made it hard for everybody in the American defense establishment, everyone concerned with American security. But it's made it particularly hard for us because as we've downsized that more than a third, outside of our walls, mankind has gone through the greatest revolution in human communication since Gutenberg's invention of the printing press. And here we are, charged to work in that battle space. I mean, telecommunications is where we do our mission, and it's changed so dramatically over the past 10-plus years. That's really been the most serious challenge for us.
Over the years, what have you observed as the key characteristics of good leadership?
Bonnie, that's a good one. I've seen a lot of good leaders, and they've had different styles. I guess the one that's driven me is to dance with who you brung, to bring you, yourself, to the job, not try to reshape yourself, at least not reshape too much to the demands of the particular environment in which you're placed. I guess the word is to be true to yourself. Now, that doesn't mean you adjust up and down, left and right, depending on specific circumstances, but you can't get too far from who you really are. What's worked for me and what I've seen work for many others is to look upon yourself in a leadership position as an enabler, as a person who removes impediments from those others in the organization, making sure those others have a pretty clear idea of where we want to go, and then get out of the way and let them do their part of the work.
Do you think those characteristics are changing over time? An answer ago, you described the incredible changes taking place in technology. How about in terms of the people who are in charge?
Again, I can only speak to my own experience. I can't lead the National Security Agency technologically. The people there are masters at this craft, and I shouldn't even pretend to compete with them. What I can do for them is to provide the context within which they have the greatest opportunity, the highest probability of success. And that's how I view my job. And that context could be viewed as organizational, you know, structuring the agency so that it's efficient. It could be fiscal, and that's trying to get additional resources from the administration and from Congress. It could be political, answering, for example, some of the questions you asked earlier about whether or not we obey the law. All of those create a milieu in which the natural talent of the agency should be able to come to the fore.
We're going to have to take a break now, but stay with us as we continue our conversation with General Michael Hayden, Director of NSA. When we come back, we'll find out what it's like to have the White House, the CIA, and the military as your customers.